This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I am Glenn the Geek from Lexington, Kentucky, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for July 12th, 2011, episode 205, sponsored by Kentucky Performance Products. Good morning, horse world.
I can't take it anymore!
Thank God it's Friday!
I would like, if I may, to take you on a strange journey.
We work all week so that we can eat and own a little piece of God's ground. Pushing papers and pens, red tape never ends. The stress can turn a smile into a frown. I need some horsing around. Going to the barn, my troubles.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to this Friday show. This is actually a recorded episode. Jamie and I and Jennifer are now on our way, or actually we're in Philadelphia today, and we're going to be at the American Equestrian Trade Association conference all weekend through Monday. You'll actually be able to hear us live recording from coming to you live from the ADA show on Monday in Philadelphia. We'll be bringing to you some of the hottest new things coming out in the horse world. The ADA show is a show where wholesalers come and they show off their new stuff and some of their old stuff to retailers from around the country. So retailers attend this event from all over the country and actually other countries as well. There are over 1,000 vendors at this event, so we're excited to be there, and we'll be bringing you as many guests as we can on Monday morning talking about all the new stuff in the horse world. And I guarantee you that Jamie and Jennifer will have bought some of it by Monday morning as well. But today, we are bringing to you a recorded show, and what we're going to do is we're going to do a replay of the Driving Radio Show. And if you have not heard the Driving Radio Show yet, this is episode 4 of the Driving Radio Show. If you are a regular listener now to the Driving Radio Show, our newest show, then you've probably heard this one, and you can go on, and we'll see you on Monday. But if you have not, take a listen to it. We thought this would be the one that you would enjoy the most. We have two guests that you're going to love on this show. The first one was Sammy Jo Stoller, who was the zebra guru. And she's been on the morning show before, and she talks about training zebras to drive. So that was a fun interview. And the second one was David Hellmuth. And he is the guy who runs the Wells Fargo Stagecoach, travels all over the country with his quarter horse hitch, and parades and all kinds of events. But in his younger days, he actually drove a carriage from the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific Ocean. And he talks all about that, as well as he worked on the last 40-horse hitch that was ever hitched for parades here in the United States. So he is a fascinating guy, a lot of fun. What I did is I plucked these two interviews out of the Driving Radio Show. If you'd like to hear the rest of that show that Dr. Wendy Ying and I do, then you can go to drivingradioshow.com. We hope you enjoy this. Have some fun with these interviews. I think you're going to like them. It's going to be a pretty short show this morning, less than an hour. And we hope that you have a terrific weekend. We will be back with you live Monday morning from Philadelphia from the ADA show. And we can't forget that today's show is sponsored by Kentucky Performance Products. So we'll be up with the interviews. You're going to want to hear these from the Driving Radio Show. I think you're going to enjoy them right after this word from Kentucky Performance Products. Have a great weekend, everybody. Regular listeners to the show know that we love Kentucky Performance Products. And that's an easy thing to do because Kentucky Performance Products stand behind their products and they believe in them. Your complete satisfaction is guaranteed. If you are unsatisfied with any of their products, they will gladly refund your money. Does your horse or pony get fat on air alone? Is he living in a dry lot or turned out with a muzzle? Can't feed him more than a handful of grain and some hay? Then you need Microphase. Microphase is a great way to ensure your horse or pony gets all of the nutrients he needs to stay healthy without adding calories to his diet. Microphase contains the vitamins and trace minerals not found in grass or hay, and your horse will eat it right out of your hand. You can learn more about Microphase and all of the products from Kentucky Performance Products by visiting kppusa.com. That's kppusa.com. Check out Microphase. Next guest is terrific. She has been on almost every one of our shows in the Horse Radio Network. She has been one of our most prolific guests. Because she has so much to talk about. She is known as a zebra guru. She was raised on a working cattle ranch in eastern Oregon. She grew up doing wildlife rehab on birds of prey, antelope, deer, elk, badgers. She's been a professional animal trainer and horse clinician for 10 years. She's fun. She's lively. She just has this ranch in Texas where she has so many different animals. Today, we're going to talk to her about her work driving zebras and water buffaloes. Yep, you heard it right.
Hi, Sammy. So tell us about your driving zebra.
Well, I have Charlie is my main driving zebra, and he is now a 5-year-old stallion. And he is just really a lot of fun. He very much enjoys his driving.
And do you drive him single, but is there another little zebra friend waiting in the wings to go pair or tandem?
I have a second zebra that I'm starting and driving, and he's not to the point yet of being able to drive him as a pair. I've only just started the second one, so I just drive him singly.
Oh, and where do you get these zebras? I mean, do you breed them or?
Walmart.
Yes, Walmart.
They have them at Walmart?
I tell people that all the time. People ask me all the time where I get them, and I tell them Walmart is my standby answer. My next answer is eBay.
eBay. I should have thought of that.
Well, there are actually breeders.
Oh, now you get them on Craigslist. They're Craigslist.
Craigslist. Yeah. Actually, I honestly have bought a zebra off of Craigslist before.
No!
Yes!
Are you kidding me?
No, not kidding at all. You can buy all sorts of stuff off of there. But I don't breed zebras myself. So what I do is I work with several other breeders. And the big problem with the breeding programs is, of course, that there are too many males produced. So obviously, the females go back into breeding programs and zoos and things, but nobody has a use for all these males that are born, because obviously about half of the babies are going to be males. So a lot of them end up in bad places where either they're not treated well, some of them are, they go to the hunt farms where they'll hunt them, or a lot of them are put down, things like that. So my idea is to get some of these males, train them, and give them a better purpose in life, so make them more valuable so that they'll have a better, longer life in the end.
And you said that your 5-year-old, you kept him a stallion. Is there any reason why you don't geld them for, to make them easier to handle, or are they not the same as horses in that aspect? Or?
Well, most of them are gelded. Charlie's just not. He's one I've had from a baby, and he is not gelded. And I had thoughts that I might create some Zorses and Zonkeys with him, but I'm not sure if I will do that or not, but I have the option there.
She needs more animals on the ranch.
You should breed minis. You should breed them to minis and make mini zebras.
Cute. They're very cute.
Now, how do you train a zebra? Is it you train them the same way to drive as you do a horse? What was your training technique?
Well, pretty much I train all of my animals the same way. Zebras, a person can't forget that they are a wild animal, and that's always going to be there. But at the same time, the training methods are the same. I don't go to the next step until I've completed the first one, and just making sure that I do things thoroughly. And every day, whenever I get one of my animals out, whether it's a donkey, a horse, or a zebra, I read that animal, and I make sure that, everything from, when I put the halter on to pulling them out to having them stand for grooming, what is their attitude like? And if their attitude says that they're not ready to drive today, I'm not going to put myself or my animal at risk and drive them. Maybe we'll do something different instead.
And now you also drive a water buffalo. Is that correct?
Yes, I have Wilson the water buffalo. He has quite the following. He's a popular guy.
And tell us a little bit, about
the name
Wilson.
Fits a water buffalo. Wilson.
I know.
Kind of just
like, how did you get Wilson? Did you have him from a little tiny baby?
Yeah, that's a story in itself. I was going to Missouri to transport a camel for somebody, and while I was there picking up this camel, in the stall next to him was this little bitty water buffalo calf. And you know, some women impulse buy shoes. I impulse buy a buffalo.
Oh.
He just had to come home with me. So I brought a baby water buffalo home, and now he's an oversized Labrador with horns.
How much does he weigh?
Right now, he's just over 1,000 pounds, and he should get somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 when he's full grown. He just turned 2.
Okay, so you trained him the same way, or is there training of a water buffalo?
Yeah. And it's the same thing, and with the cattle are slightly different, but he does really well. I ride him and drive him. My neighbors all think I'm crazy because they cleared their land with bulldozers, and I had a chainsaw and a water buffalo. So.
And what's he like to ride? Is he comfortable, or is he bouncy, or...?
He's very slow, and if you can keep him out of the lake, you're doing good.
Oh, that must be bad. He goes and takes you for a swim?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Keeping him out of the water, yeah, that's a full-time job in itself. He's very sweet, though.
What kind of bit do you use for a water buffalo?
I just use a halter with him.
Okay, good. I was just wondering.
I'm glad you don't use a ring through the nose. Yeah. That would be a little...
No nose ring.
I wouldn't like that. So do you drive any other...
Stylish.
Do you drive any other of your animals? Because, you know, Glenn and I keep saying, oh, you have a driving horse?
Uh-huh.
Glenn, and what's your horse? What breed is your horse?
My horse is Picasso, and he's one that I heard about, and I bought him for $100, and my idea was, you know, he was kind of in bad shape, and people really needed to find a home for him, and so I got him, and I thought, well, I'll fix him up and maybe sell him as a kid's horse. He was pretty young, and I thought, oh, he's nice and cute. Well, I started working with him, and I thought, oh, no, he's going to stay here forever. So, you know, I keep getting those lifers, the ones that I'm going to have for the rest of their life, and my pasture is getting full.
Does anyone even recognize you when you're driving the horse? I mean, they must just drive right on by, not even see you.
Yeah. Picasso is one. He is he's solid white. And I've competed with him in combined driving, and he does really well. And nobody knows what breed he is because he thinks he wants to be gated sometimes and not other times. And I think one leg's just longer than the other. He can't figure out where his gates are. But he's really wonderful. And I'm lucky enough to live fairly close to somebody who's very well known in the driving world, Tom O'Carroll. He's got Haven Hill down here in... fantastic place to go driving. He has the Haven Hill driving trial down here, and it's just been great to be able to take in there. And I've actually taken my zebras and driven my zebra over there. And I'm not sure what Tom thinks of that. He probably thinks I'm nuts too, but a great person to drive with.
Are the other horses afraid of the zebras when they see you driving them?
Usually, yes. Not as much when you're driving. Carriage horses tend to be different than a lot of saddle horses. In general, carriage horses are much calmer, and they tend to be more tolerant. And I think part of that is because when we're training them to drive, we're very much more specific on what they need to be doing. Like, when we ask a carriage horse to stand still, it's much more important that they stand still than a saddle horse.
Yeah,
you know,
true.
If a saddle horse moves when you're getting on him, it's not such a big deal. But if a carriage horse moves when people are getting in the cart, well, somebody could get run over or get hurt. And obviously, if you're hitching and they're moving, well, it's very difficult and dangerous. So the driving horses in general don't tend to be nearly as scared of him.
Now, how big is your zebra that you drive?
How big is he?
Yeah.
Charlie's not very big. He is somewhere between 400 and 500 pounds. He's probably about 450. My other riding zebra is quite a bit bigger.
But did they run 14 hands? Are they pony size? Or
No, they're smaller than that. My riding zebra is much bigger. He weighs close to 700 pounds, and he's going to be just under 14 hands. He's probably 13 too. Charlie's much smaller. He's a pony. He's quite a bit smaller, and I was disappointed because he's just not going to get big enough to ride.
And Sammy, now, do you have any advice for any of our listeners if they decided they want to drive a zebra? How do they get into that?
Well, it's something that it's a very long-term goal. It's not something that you're just going to go out and buy one and hitch it up and start driving it. With mine, I spend a lot of time with them, and the relationship has to be there, and it can be a very dangerous thing. But also, you're limited on where you can drive, because you can't really go to horse venues because they're scared of horses, horses are scared of zebras. And, you know, our number one responsibility is to keep people safe. And you're not doing any good if you're risking other people as well. So it's not something for everybody for certain, but it's definitely not a new thing either. Zebras have been being driven for a couple hundred years, and there's records going back, you know, even in the U.S., there's a possibility that my zebras descend from herds that have been in the U.S. for over 100 years. So finding good bloodlines, zebras that have been bred for their a little bit calmer nature. So people have been more selectively breeding zebras, especially over the last 20 to 30 years.
I got to say, I looked up zebras for sale on Google, and I'm shocked at the number of places that sell zebras.
Are you kidding
there
me?
There are a lot. There's a lot of zebras.
There's a website called Zebras Are Us.
Yep. She's a friend of mine. I'm pretty well connected with most of the zebra people in the U.S. So.
And zebra, by the way, in case you're wondering, Wendy, will cost you from $10,000 to $25,000, it looks like.
Oh, wow, that's steep.
They're expensive.
It is.
Well, it is.
And that's untrained. Untrained, right?
So I got to know when you're going to start driving ostriches.
Now, you know, I think I'll stick with my chickens, but I don't think I'm going to be driving them. That would be quite a little hitch.
Well, you know, Wendy's always wanted to drive a goat. You don't have driving goats, do you?
I do not have driving goats, but they make good draft animals.
I want to drive a four in hand of goats. I'm going to do that someday.
Are you going to do some combined driving with it?
I would love to. That is my dream. I want to show up with a four in hand of Nubians at a combined driving event.
That would be fun.
What she knows about goats, you could fit in a thimble. So she'll show up and she won't know that she has fainting goats. And she'll go to the arena, and the first thing that happens, they'll all fall over.
I would never show up with a fainting goat. For dressage, so I would have to keep everything calm, because if you get them too excited, they just tip over.
There you go.
Yeah.
I found
it'd be very difficult in an obstacle course, because they just fall over at every single obstacle.
Hey, I found a little baby one for you in Jonesboro, Louisiana, Wendy. $3,000.
Is it cute?
He's really cute.
2 weeks old. Oh.
Baby zebras are cute. They're all cute.
I want to get it early and bottle feed it.
Yeah, that's a big chore. It's you know, I've hand raised a lot of mine, but babies can be very difficult. You've got to do all the teaching, and we make terrible substitutes for horses or zebras in this case.
Oh, and I'm really bad because
babies.
I always spoil all my animals rotten. So if I had a baby zebra to bottle feed, it would be like a total unruly, spoiled brat. This is why I don't have children.
Most of them are. That's the biggest mistake that people make, or the biggest issue that they have. Is it's not that their zebras are so wild. It's that they are so spoiled rotten that they walk all over them.
Right.
Sammy, where can people find your website?
I am at zebraguru.com.
And if you go on to horseradionetwork.com and you just put in the search, you just put S-A-M-M-I, you'll see that we've had Sammy on almost every show we've done. Thank you, Sammy Joe. This has been great again.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thanks again to Sammy for joining us. As I said, she's been on almost every show we've had. And
I can see why. She's the best.
I know.
She is so exciting.
We have to go down there and drive a water buffalo.
We have to.
I mean, I
want a Roman ride.
I don't imagine it's a speedy drive.
No.
It's probably perfect. My
yeah,
speed.
It's our speed. I don't like to spill my champagne while driving.
But you know what? No river is a problem. That water buffalo just pull you right through. You won't have any problems with the rivers.
But you have to take a break. Doesn't he like to lay down in the river?
That's true. They sort of like to stop and wallow in the mud.
Maybe we can picnic in the river, and then when he's done wallowing, we can move on.
So many jokes here. All right, our next guest. If you think Sammy Joe was fun and fascinating, you wait till you meet David Hellmuth. He is one of a kind, and I'm saying that in a very good way. I met him what I thought was the first time a couple of weeks ago at Keeneland at the racetrack here in Kentucky. They have a car show every year, and the Concours d'Elegance, and it's a terrific car show. It's just so much fun. And well, the Wells Fargo stagecoach was there, so I got talking to the guys at the Wells Fargo stagecoach, and they said, "You got to meet David. David's the driver, and he's the one that does all this." And I met David. He gave us a complete tour of all the trucks and trailers and all that stuff. It was so much fun.
And didn't you also get your picture taken in the stagecoach because you were wearing the right hat?
I'll post that on Facebook. That's right. I was wearing my cowboy hat that day, so I kind of was the only one around that fit. And there were a bunch of people taking picture of me in the stagecoach. So we'll post that on Facebook for sure. But that's only part of David's life. He has done so many things in the world of driving. And, you know, he'll talk about it in this interview, but you're going to be fascinated by this guy. We only have a half an hour to talk to him, but I guarantee you, Wendy, by the time we're done with this, you're going to wish we had 2 days.
I know. We need a lot more time for these guests. We need an hour-long show, I think. I think we should transition to that.
Well, the show is an hour, but it's just because we have so much that we do during each show. we would need a two-hour show.
Two-hour.
Well, we'll have him back again, too, I'm sure. But let's take a listen to one of the most fascinating drivers you're going to meet out there, David Hellmuth. Well, hi, David, and welcome to the Driving Radio Show. And you are certainly a person that knows a little bit, just a tiny bit, about driving.
Well, I tell you what, it's an honor to have a great phone call from you guys. And I think it's awesome that you guys have a driving radio show. It's something that probably should have been done for a while, and it's very good to know.
Well, and you certainly have been driving for about 400 years, it seems like. So how long have you been driving?
Well, I'll tell you what, I guess it's no secret. I was born in 1958, and at 10 years old, I was driving in the fields. And, of course, by the time I was 5, 6 years old, my dad would always buy a Shetland pony and at the sale barn for about $5, and I'd train him to ride, and first thing you know, we were driving him, and then he'd sell him for $300. And of course, just when I was ready to really like him and thought he's my pony, he'd sell him and buy me another $5 one.
Well, see, you're a businessman from the start.
Pony trainer from the beginning. Well, you've graduated now to some serious horsepower.
Yeah, we got some pretty serious horsepower. You know, that's been many moons ago, and I started showing horses in the, you know, the biggest thing is I was born and raised on an Amish farm up there in Iowa, and my mom and dad and the whole neighborhood, all they would do is just, you know, work their horses, and I seen a lot of spirit in horses, and I don't ever like a horse to lose that spirit. And I said there's a Draft Horse Journal book that comes out 4 times a year, and that was like a Bible in our household for me. And I learned more in that book and just, you know, wanting to know what I can do to make a horse show off what he's got, the abilities that he's got. And, of course, the next thing is for whatever he's doing that the people would enjoy it. And, of course, that is horse showing, and that's how I got started.
And what kind of showing did you do?
Well, the first class was Belgian halter class. That was at the National Dairy Cattle Congress. I was 12 years old, and of course, the colt that I shown was first place. And it's kind of like anything, you know, you kind of got the bug, and it just escalated from there. And of course, by the time I was 16 and a half years old, I was with Dick Sparrow of the 40 Horse Hitch in Ziering, Iowa, and traveled all over the United States as well as Canada.
So you did the 40 Horse Hitch then?
Yeah, that was my first real job.
Well,
the 40
that.
Horse Hitch. Yeah.
What was your job? What was the what did were you responsible
my
for?
My job was I was pretty much a jack of all trades. Of course, Dick Sparrow came over there when I was about 12 years old. He said, "Hey, son," he said, "you ever want a job, you call me." And I said, "Hey, man, I'm Amish, you know, there's no way. I mean, I can't leave home." And he said, "Well, you know, don't worry about all of that. I know you guys are good people and this and that." And he said, "I won't make it hard on you." And I always kept the number. And one thing just led to another. And finally, I said, "You know what? I'm going to go." I called him up, and he sent a driver up, met me up in Fairbank, Iowa, and picked me up. And that was in 1976, I believe, the centennial year. Everything was red, white, and blue. And we traveled all over the United States. And I tell you, it was an unbelievable experience. To answer your question, what was my job? I was about the only one in the group that knew how to drive horses my age. So when we were home, which I didn't like, I always liked it when we're on the road. At home, we'd hook four horses up, and to the manure spreader we go. And I had to drive them and do all the hard work as far as driving horses and spreading manure. And all the city kids were in there filling the manure spreader up. I would have rather filled the manure spreader up at that time than drive four wild horses, because they never gave me four broke ones.
Right.
Because, you know, we were training them.
Right.
Now, what kind of horses did they have on the 40-horse hitch? I got two questions. What kind of horses on the 40-horse hitch? And how the heck long does it take you to hook up 40 horses?
Oh, that's a great question.
You know, everybody, there was 10 of us in charge of four horses apiece, so obviously 10 times 4 is 40. But first off, the breed was Belgian.
Okay.
And the second question was, how long does it take you? You know, it would take me probably, you know, an hour to get my four horses ready. Now, when we're ready, it's going to take 15 minutes per four to hook them up. So just take 15,
oh my gosh.
15 times,
10?
You know, there's four in a group, 15 times 10, and there you are.
Oh, my. It took hours just to get this thing ready to go.
I know. What if you forgot something?
That would be from absolute start to finish. Now, if we just, once we have everything set and all the harnesses put in place, we could do it, hook them up 5 minutes per four.
How long were the lines?
Well, I forget all the the information on that, but I mean, they were unbelievable long, obviously. probably about 15 feet times 10. That'd be 150 feet just to get them back to the wagon. And we hooked them to a very large circus wagon. I drove the 40-horse hitch literally with my hands in Marshalltown, Iowa, at a parade. Now, you know, not the whole thing or not. I mean, not the whole parade, but I mean, I literally had them in my hands. And that was one thing about Dick. He would give you an opportunity. And one of the greatest things I've ever done was learn how to Roman ride when I was with Dick Sparrow. And I did the opening country music show for Glenn Campbell up in Lake Crystal, Minnesota in 1976. And that was probably the first real sniff that I got into the show biz. And, and of course, I've been kind of smelling it ever since.
What an exciting teenage years.
I know, Wendy. I don't even know where to start.
I know, Roman riding. I thought the 40-horse hitch was exciting enough, and then you go Roman riding on the weekends or whatever. How great.
Well, what we did is a lot of times we would do this Roman riding right during, let's say the 40-horse hitch was there. I think the Lake Crystal, Minnesota was like a farm fest. So we hooked the horses up, you know, once a day, the 40-horse hitch, and did all that and had everything on display. And then this Roman riding just kind of became an act on the side.
That's so great.
Well, then I know, and Wendy, you've done six. Have you ever done, you've never done 40, right?
I've never done six. I've only done four.
Okay.
That was hard enough.
How many reins, who are you steering? Is it?
Well, you know, there's literally you do drive them, but it's called snap and tie back. And the front horses were always snapped to the rear ones, but still you had two lines for each four. And they just, it's just like multiple driving other than you just multiplied it. And, you know, it was really not as hard as you really would think as far as in your mind. I mean, it just kind of blows your mind when you think about it. But when you're really in it, I wouldn't be afraid to, if somebody called me up and said, you know what, I want to put a 40-horse hitch together and do it. I mean, it wouldn't bother me at all. I'd say, well, I'll see what my schedule's like. It's kind of busy, but we'll see what we can do.
So, okay, you have to tell us, what was like the most, your closest brush with danger with the 40-horse hitch when you were out on the show circuit?
The closest breath of danger on the 40-horse hitch was we were absolute all portable, and we had semis that we tied together, cabled together, and, of course, the tent and everything was hooked onto them. So storm, flooding, natural disasters was always something. We got caught in a rainstorm over in Kansas, and we started flooding during the night, and we got caught up in Kankakee, Illinois one night. But it was natural disasters. Absolutely never had even a close call with a problem with a horse. And you know what? I can say that in anything I've ever done with horses, never even a close call. And I've done everything.
Wow.
Well, then you go through time here a little bit, and we could spend 2 days with you. And
yeah, I know.
It's just, I don't even know. But there is something...
go ahead.
I was just going to say, there is something that I found out, and then I went, oh, my God, I have met him before. You and I, as I said in the introduction, we met over at Keeneland, and you showed me around the trucks and the trailers and everything in the tack room and got to hang out and check out the stagecoach, which we'll talk about Wells Fargo in a minute. But in the meantime, there was this little thing called Country's Reminisce Hitch. And you will never guess what I'm holding in my hand is the book called The Main Event, written by Firestone,
really?
Because I saw the Country's Reminisce Hitch in Pennsylvania in Amish country. And and we saw the horses and everything. It was at Shady Maple Farmers Market. I can't tell you. This must have been back. When did you guys do this?
It would have been 2002 and 2003.
Yep. And
No.
You're way. This is back
90,
in
92 and 93.
Yes. This is back in the 90s when we lived there, and they came into town, and we got the magazine. So So we went and saw it, and then we bought the book. I have the book. I think it was a VHS at the time or something.
It's video that we actually did two of them.
Two
movies about going across America.
Well, tell people about that. You actually drove across America.
Oh, yeah. That was the biggest thing, you know. One thing leads to a million. I only stayed with Dick Sparrow 1 year, and I said, you know, I want to be Dick Sparrow. I don't want to work for him. And I've had two, three chances to work for Budweiser, and in fact, two of my cousins are working there now, and they have been for quite some time. And I said, you know what, and it's hard to turn down jobs, especially when you come up with nothing, pretty much what I did, and scratch for everything you got, But you know what? I said, I don't want to work for Budweiser. I want to be Budweiser. So I went out and got the opportunity of showing my own horses, take my own breeding stock, and went out to California at the Los Angeles County Fair. And pretty much we won everything there. And you know, you always know somebody's watching, but you never know who's really watching and what it might turn into. And that was a gal by the name of Phyllis Groupie in Stockton, California, and she gave me the greatest opportunity I ever had or wanted, and that was she tried to hire me Johnny on the spot, so to speak, and it took about 2 months to convince me and to convince her that this is all really going to go, and our goal was we set a mission that we're going to put together the best six-horse hitch in the world, and I told her it's going to take 5 years. We did it in three, and after that world show event in Ocala, Florida, where we were the 19th top finalist to go in to the Classic Series over all breeds, I still hold the record today for winning the number one six-horse hitch and back-to-back winning the number one eight-horse hitch with a three-panel judge in Ocala, Florida at the Live Oak Invitational. and I was 19th going in, and we won them both over all breeds. And that's not just Belgians. That's every draft horse that was qualified to go on this show. So that is when Mr. Roy Ryman of Country and Reminisce magazines called and said, you know what? You have a wagon load of trophies. I'd like to share them with the world. And, you know, no, I never in my wildest dream thought somebody would ask me to take a victory lap across America, but that is exactly what it was. In other words, that mission going across America was not only for the people, it was also for the horses, to show the spirit that they still have after winning all their championships and winning all the hearts over across the United States. And we started with 7.2 million subscribers of that magazine that you're talking about, Farm and Ranch and all that. And I told these execs in the office, I sat down, they were in there for 15 years, and here I come, all wild and raring and ready to go and take these champions across America. And they said, the biggest thing is we don't want to work any, you know, we don't really care about getting any more subscribers or getting the company to become any bigger. And I said, well, I don't do anything quietly, but I said, I will assure you that you will have a snowball effect like you have never seen. I said, my goal is to have 21 million subscribers by the time we get across America. And I believe the number's correct. We had 26 million. And, of course, it was just unreal. I mean, my life has been unreal, and I love every minute of it. And that is, in a nutshell, what we did. And then we decided also that we're going to a lot of the proceeds are going to go to senior centers after we've seen how much money it's going to make. And of course, he made so much money that Reader's Digest wanted to come buy it. And obviously, Roy Ryman has not worked there. Well, I shouldn't say work. He's a working man. He might even be listening to this radio. I don't know. But he's 70-some years old and still works hard, but sold the company for mega millions.
Well, and I know Reminisce Magazine is still around.
They're owned by Reader's Digest now.
Yeah, and it was back then, you know, that was before internet and all that other stuff. And that was the amazing part of this cross-country trip, Wendy, was this was a magazine really with 7 million subscribers, which in the whole scheme of the United States isn't a lot. But
yeah,
word got out. When they were in town, you knew they were in town, and thousands of people would show up. Am I wrong here? Would show up everywhere you went.
Oh, we gave rides to over 50,000 people. There was never a day that we left Kennebunkport, Maine on April 13th of 1992, and there was never a day, 16 months, that we went across America that people didn't show up. It was unbelievable. You know, we wanted to stop every mile and pick them up in Pennsylvania and Ohio, some of them areas. If you were in Pennsylvania on any given day, you probably know how many people came out.
Yep.
And of course, not just that. I mean, we were, you know, the TVs would follow us. The MTV even came out, and Associated Press, you just never knew who was going to bob in and catch us. You know, the only rescue, way I could get away is I got smart and I bought a nice rock star motorhome. So I said, if I'm going to get treated like a rock star, I might as well live like one. And that was always the place to kind of go in and, you know, get your bearings together and not come out until you're ready for the people. Because once you were out, it was over.
So how many miles a day did you drive?
You know, we only went 10 miles a day. And I know any horse person that hears this says, oh, my God, you know, he could have went a lot further than that. Well, yeah, we could have. But if you've seen the video and if you've seen the book, you've seen the condition the horses stayed in. And I wanted them horses, again, if you work a horse too hard, you lose that spirit. And I never wanted to go to any farther than the horse had spirit for.
Yeah.
So 10 miles a day average is what we did. The most I ever went was in New Mexico, and it snowed that morning. I'll never forget it. We went 17 miles, but, you know, there's a couple days out there in San Diego where it was pretty hilly. We only went 7. So
right, in
a rough estimate, 10 miles was totally the max.
And what was it like going over the Rockies? You had to cross the Rockies at some point, didn't you?
Yeah, we went, what we did is we went from Kennebunkport, Maine, and
yeah.
I, I figured out my own route. The only reason I knew about Kenny Bumpcourt, Maine, is, you know, President Bush was the president at the time, and that was his retirement home, and that's actually where we, or I should say his second home, and that's where we went and discovered to get in the ocean. And then we went as far as Centerville, Iowa. And why Centerville? Well, it just kind of has a good ring to it. And it also is home of the world's largest square for a small town. And we had a huge ceremony there, and then we picked everything up and went to San Diego. And we recaptured the trip and regrouped and came right back to Centerville. So we pointed a horseshoe in the east and a horseshoe in the west, and it still stands in Centerville, Iowa today.
Oh, wow, what an inspiring story. That's incredible.
I'll have to show Wendy this book and let her have it for a while, because the book is amazing. And one of the best, it's full of pictures of all the different stops and all the senior centers and all the thousands of people and all the adventures driving. But one of the best pictures in here is of David Roman riding in, and I believe that was in California in the ocean.
Yes, that was actually, no, that was in Kennebunkport, Maine.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, right behind Bush's house. Yeah, Roman rode in there, and I kind of forgot about that. But then we actually made posters out of it. I don't know how many thousands of posters they sold as well as the magazine and T-shirts. I mean, it was that poster was still almost number one for sales, the Roman riding posters, even almost as popular as the Six Horse Hitch. And then we'd put on the bottom, don't try this at home.
And Firestone was your Belgian. He is the one technically that wrote the book.
In other words, Firestone was our ham. He was our world champion, a horse that I bought sight unseen at pretty much a record price back then as a rising three-year-old. And, of course, Firestone is so well-known throughout the Belgian world today. There's not a Belgian that's any good that don't have some blood in that goes back to Firestone even today. And he just made such an unbelievable impact in the showbiz world that we just said, you know what, Firestone is our man. And we got Roy and I said that, you know, we had a little daily diary on alongside every day of kind of what happened. But we said we're going to give Firestone the mouthpiece and let him write the book.
And he was pushing, if I remember right, he had to be pushing 18 hands, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was right at 18-1.
Yeah, I thought so. He's a
Where did he go on your team? Was he a leader, wheeler?
He was a leader till he became 6 years old, and we put him in the swing. And that happens a lot, and you know that in four-hand driving. You know, a younger horse, very aggressive, he's going to make an awesome leader. And, you know, sometimes he's not as aggressive as you thought he was when he's six or seven. And, of course, with four-hand driving, what you're doing is, maybe 12 or 17.
Yeah.
Because they last longer. And it seems like, I don't think that you guys show in national competition until they're, about six?
Yeah, probably it takes them till they're about six. We can't technically start them till they're four. We can't show them in combined driving till they're four.
Sure. Well, I just started a brand new thing. Now we're getting way off the subject again, but I just got me some warm blood babies. We just weaned them. They're only 3 months old. And, of course, I bought an unbelievable, outstanding young colt, an Oldenburg colt, out of a Netherlands champion over there. And I don't have him home yet, but I'm toying with it. I'm going to start pulling the stagecoach with these young guys and kind of get them going. Of course, all my horses have full white socks and a strip, and they're all chested or red. And the only reason for that is it's just I still like impressing people in the parade route. You know, that lady that's never seen a horse before or something that she'll remember. Oh, look, they all have full white socks. You know, people still... They still look. And also, another thing is, a black horse is very easy to keep clean, even when he's dirty. You might not see that he's dirty. A white leg is guaranteed dirty if it's dirty, and
that's
it's not
true.
White.
Let's fast forward here a little bit before we run out of time. And how did you get the gig? Now, you guys are one of the teams that does that does the Wells Fargo Stagecoach. And you do parades, and I saw you at a car show over here at Keeneland in Lexington, and that's where we met. So how did you get that one?
Well, when I was out with the Groupie Real Estate Company for 10 years out there in California, and again, everybody said that, you know, you got to use a parade hitch and then also a show hitch. And I said, I never seen a horse that's not that universal. So, but you know, I don't know anything. I'm still learning. So, I was the first person that I remember ever that would take my show hitch and go to a parade, or take my parade hitch and go to the show. And they're all the same horses. And one of the great parades that I've done was, after we won the Royal Winter Fair in Toronto, Canada, we were also the first United States hitch ever to go into the Royal Winter Fair in Toronto and win the six horse hitch for the first time, and the absolute ever participant, first ever from California. So, but in the same token, the Royal Winter Fair was in November. January 1st was the Rose Bowl parade in Pasadena, California. We took them champions, went right down there in the Rose Bowl, did the Rose Parade, went back in February to the Live Oak Invitational and won the World Show. So obviously I got the honor of having Bob Newhart and his family on top of the wagon. And again, a lot of people watch and see you. And I've known about the Wells Fargo Stagecoach all the time I lived out there in Stockton, California. Never really thought much about it, to be honest with you. I was always busy in my own world doing what I do best, and that's showing and bringing them horses first class in front of the people. And, you know, the Stagecoach in my eyes was just kind of an old, great history, but probably not something that I was actually interested in. And I, of course, got approached with a great friend of mine that started this business with Wells Fargo, and him and I got together and we decided that we're going to move forward and make the best that we can make a Stagecoach look for the 21st century, and take that mission to New York and show them that the Stagecoach, Wells Fargo, is 150 years old. And I got the privilege to put the semi, truck, trailer, and the horses together for that mission. And of course, we never looked back. It's been unbelievable. I started with one Stagecoach. Today I run three Stagecoaches plus a little Buffalo Bill, which is a 1/4 size Stagecoach that we use for a display only. But it's the greatest thing I've ever landed. I mean, it's a world renowned company, and I'm kind of well known myself, and it's just kind of one of them things that just kind of goes hand in hand, and I'm absolutely doing what I love, and that is showing these great horses to great people, and working for an awesome company that's not doing it for a gimmick or a pleasure or a hobby. They're doing it for the strength where they came from 150 years ago. And that's the first time I ever worked or was sponsored by a company that does that. As all of you know, in the horse business, most of the time it's a feed company or shampoo or whatever you want to call it, but it's also just kind of a fad.
Right.
And this is the real, real deal. And I love the Budweiser Clydesdales. They've been in business for a long time, but, you know, they got bought out by InBev. They're still doing great. And I love Budweiser horses, and they did a lot for the breed. But just think about one little thing. The Wells Fargo has everything that somebody needs. I don't care if it's a school kid going to college or a checking account, savings account, a mortgage. Now I sound like I'm getting paid to do this interview, but I'm not. I'm just that excited about it. But, you know, it is absolutely just an automatic. It's a no-brainer of what this does, and it shows so many people still where we come from.
Well, I guess,
yeah,
you know,
it's a big part of our history.
Was it hard?
And so, you know, and I always tell people, you know, I love the Budweiser horses. The only thing is, you know, it takes money to buy beer. You still got to come to me first.
Now, you drive, what makes it a little bit different, too, is you actually drive those heavily chromed horses you were talking about are quarter horses. They're not draft horses.
That is correct. Well, you know, when you look at it, I started with crossbreds, half Belgian, half quarter horse. You know, man, I don't want to lose my Belgian, you know. I was kind of born and raised with them. And then I looked at it and did all the studies, and, you know, there's no way. I mean, the Belgian didn't pull a stagecoach back when. I mean, the Belgian was made for pulling and, you know, freight wagons and stuff like the Budweiser Clydesdales do. So, well, what did they use? Well, they used a lot of basically thoroughbreds and quarter horses. And, you know, a lot of them horses were mixed horses, a little Mustang in there and all kinds. So I decided, well, I'm going to try a quarter horse. You know, after all, a quarter horse is very level-headed, a lot of brains, and we're working for a bank, so a quarter don't sound all bad. So that's how I started.
I like that joke. It's all about marketing. And now the stagecoach was really important in opening up the West too, though, because it wasn't only carrying the money, but didn't it also carry the mail? It was actually our American mail coach, right?
It was your American mail coach. It was the money and also the transportation. You know, you could go to Omaha, Nebraska, to Sacramento, California for $300.
It was the Greyhound bus.
That was a lot of
money. Yeah, the Greyhound bus.
It was the first Greyhound, right? Right, David?
Yeah. So, you know, that's back in 1852. I mean, we got all the documents on that. I mean, the WellsFargoHistory.com is unbelievable in the archives how much you'll see today on the internet, you know, what we have now. And, you know, coming back to this trip across America, can you absolutely imagine how big we could have been if it would have been today's age with internet? I mean, we were waiting 30 days in advance to try to figure out what the people are going to read about our trip.
Right.
So, you know, my head is constantly going and spinning and about, you know, all the avenues that are have never even been touched.
Well, maybe you have to take another trip across country with the stagecoach and the quarter horses.
Well, you know, I wouldn't talk too loud because if if I ever had that opportunity and the right sponsor, obviously I think I already have the sponsor, but it would have to be, you know, a lot of fine details. But wouldn't that be very awesome, though, to do something like that and have it live in all the nursing homes and, the, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever it may be, and just make a regular segment. I mean, if you really think about it, it would be never ending.
Yep.
You could have a streaming webcam and you could just, people could sign in on the internet and see where you are.
We could even be live on the horse radio, horse
training
radio.
That's right.
Yeah. Glenn, you could go with them.
I think Wendy and I signed up for that trip. Hey, David, this has been great. We've run out of time, believe it or not, and we would love to have you back sometime if you'll do that. Maybe we could talk a little bit more about the horses and you know, get into a little more detail on training and what you have at the farm and stuff.
Yeah, that, and I'm working on a book. I mean, it's been a long time coming. I just haven't had time to do it, but the book is called Long Hard Road to Paradise, and, of course, that is just kind of my whole life story, and, of course, I'm the luckiest person in the world to have that opportunity to do it, and I want to share it with very educational about young children that think they have no, you know, maybe give up too quick, kind of like a young horse that sometimes people give up too quick. So, you know, I want to be remembered for helping people and make it greater than what it was. And so I have a lot left to do in my life, but I'm always going to be free to do stuff like this. And I just like lots of great ideas. And of course we have our own website now, davidhelmuth.com. And we're just brand new under construction on that. And we're just, you know, growing slowly, but almost going as fast as we can go.
Well, I got to tell you, you've had the longest Rumspringa ever.
You know, it's only on the Drive Radio Show can you have Amish.
You know what? I'm still Rumspringing.
I bet. That's what I'm saying. You're still at it. Hey, can you tell I grew up in Amish country, Lancaster County, Pennsylvania?
You bet. That is awesome. That is awesome.
We'll have to make a bumper sticker for the future.
Yes. Longest Rumspringa ever.
We have to, you know.
That's your closing.
Now that we're talking about this, I need a guy that can write this book that can understand the language that I'm talking about, I'll talk all day long as he can dictate it and write it as a publisher. That's what I'm looking for, because there are so many books out and so many stories about Rumspringa and the Amish and this and that, but I've never really heard or read one that was 100% real. There's so much fakeness about it.
Yeah. There definitely is. And having grown up in that world, I was not Amish, but when you grow up in Lancaster County, you have a lot of Mennonite friends, a lot of Amish friends. And, you get to know everybody and you realize, then we would hear people talk about the Amish and go, that's not right.
That's not the way it is. Yeah. Well, but the reason for it is a lot of people don't have that inside track that they can, they're making money off of what they know, but the sometimes the real deal is still the real deal. And I also say, how many times does the truth really hurt? Because the truth does hurt. And that's just like that beautiful trip we went across America. That I could do a whole book about that trip that's not even in that book. Do you realize that it took a lot to do that?
Oh, yeah.
And that not every day was that pretty and beautiful? You mean nothing happened?
Yeah. It wasn't 75 degrees and sunny every day?
Hey, David, thank you so much. We appreciate it. We appreciate you being with us. And everybody can check out your new website is davidhelmuth.com, right?
Davidhelmuth.com. You betcha.
All right. Thank you, David. I appreciate
it. Thanks, David.
Well, Jamie, Jennifer, and I hope you enjoyed those interviews from the Driving Radio Show, Episode 4. If you want to hear the rest of that episode, go to drivingradioshow.com. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you live Monday morning, 9 a.m. Eastern at horsesinthemorning.com.